everybody, and welcome back to Fueling Forward Friday. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner. Today's episode, I will be answering questions you all have submitted to me beforehand. And if you would like to submit any questions in the future, you can do so at my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast and happy Fueling Forward Friday. I hope everyone had a great week. It's always fun to start the week off with something like Boston Marathon on a Monday. I really enjoyed getting up to watch that. And I personally am not a morning person, so I fully appreciate, as a spectator on the Pacific Coast time zone, getting to watch the marathon starting at like 7 a.m. my time. That was fabulous for me. Whereas like the New York and the Boston marathons that start at 7 a.m. Eastern time, those are tough for me, I'm going to be honest. So anyway, love the ease of watching the Boston Marathon broadcast. I'm always hoping for a better broadcast. I don't know about you guys, but it's so frustrating sometimes to watch the broadcast where they aren't showing the field. Like they'll show, especially like in the women's race, they'll show the lead pack and you don't see anyone else the rest of the race. The men's race was the same way. And then when the race is over, like during the women's finish, which was an exciting finish, they kept cutting back to watch a replay of the men's winner and interviewing him or someone talking to him. And it's like, come on, show the race. So I always have a hard time with the broadcast, but I know they're doing the best they can and they're trying to squeeze everyone in. I totally understand that. But yeah, always hoping for a better broadcast and always somewhat disappointed, but that's okay. There were still some really fun and inspiring stories to follow. I think for me, some of the most inspiring, you know, Des Linden announced that it was her final marathon as a pro. And there's a really fun video of the American women kind of like bowing down to her at the end of the race and just appreciating and celebrating her for everything that she has given to the sport. So congratulations, Des, on an incredible career. And talk about longevity in sport. So amazing to see someone who's been around for so long and who's such a powerhouse in the sport be so consistent. That's an incredibly impressive feat. Something else that was really inspiring was Jess McLean, who was the top American. She has kind of recently found her stride, pun intended, with marathoning. She finished fourth at the Olympic trials in 2024. And so it's cool to see her be so consistent. And she actually shared on Instagram how she was trying to consume 80 grams of carbs per hour during the Boston Marathon, even though it was hard. And I love that she shared that because I think just generally people are so hesitant to add more fuel, you know, during longer runs and during the marathon, not realizing how much of a difference it can truly make in their performance. And so it's fun to hear, you know, one of the professionals who's doing it the best of any American woman at the race, talk about how much she was consuming. And that's like 4 gels per hour. So that's a gel every 15 minutes. So it's a pretty significant amount of fuel. And if you guys haven't listened to last week's episode with Bailey Ness, she is the founder of Cool Down. She also raced Boston. She had an incredible day. She ran 2:53, which, you know, she was kind of just running it for fun. So that's a pretty impressive, you know, time to post on that course, just running for fun. But she shared a lot about herself learning how to fuel for a marathon and how surprised she was at how good she felt when she added in more fuel. So just another person confirming that science works and it's based on reality and it's something that does really, really help with performance. So huge congratulations to Jess McLean as well. And then overall, just such an inspiring day. Congratulations to anybody who raced at Boston. I feel like when I was growing up on YouTube, my friends and I would watch like, you know, soldiers coming home videos where they'd like surprise their friends and family in class or at home or whatever. And my new soldier coming home video is Boston Marathon finish line videos. I just like, I tear up every time. It's just watching these people, you know, coming from all walks of life, running in honor of other people, you know, Boston Marathon bombing survivors who've come back to run the race. And it's just like, it gives me chills watching those videos. And there's just so many incredible finish line videos out there. And it really just reminds all of us, I think, what the marathon means to some people and how it's just such an accomplishment in and of itself. And it's always so inspiring just to see somebody complete this lifelong dream of theirs. And, you know, even in the pro field, like Emma Bates shared that it wasn't really the day that she wanted, but that she fought through it. And I think with the marathon, like a win is finishing and like feeling okay and getting through it, even if it's not exactly the race that you wanted. Half the battle is just getting to the start line healthy and then finishing the race. You know, I think that's a huge accomplishment no matter what the clock says. I mean, I know it's a little different sometimes too at the pro level, but like in general, I think it's important to have some perspective in those moments and just remind yourself that you have accomplished something great. So if you just ran Boston and you're not thrilled with your performance, I think you should be proud of yourself for fighting through to the end of the race, fighting through those demons, you know, whatever was going on. It's a big accomplishment to finish the race. So don't let the disappointment of the time take away from that accomplishment. All right. So just a couple feeling forward housekeeping things before we dive into today's questions. May is coming up next week, which is insane. And I'm really excited to be featuring some moms for May. So I'm kind of doing like a mother runner feature for the month of May because Mother's Day is in May. And I want to highlight some incredible runners who are also moms, talking about their own journeys through, you know, prenatal, postpartum, fitness journeys, finding running. So I'm excited for you guys to hear from my guests in May. And I'm also going to be announcing an exciting partnership with a company that's really supportive of moms in sport. And I just have been loving, you know, I think it's hard in this space with like ads and partnerships. So I'm kind of like, well, why don't I focus on really partnering with brands that I believe in? And if I can, partnering with small businesses, because as a small business myself, I know that it can be really hard to, you just can't compete as well with the big brands when it comes to exposure and things like that. So I would like to use my platform to help uplift other small businesses and, you know, if possible, even female-founded or co-founded small businesses. So some of the ones you've heard from so far have kind of fit the bill, which is really fun for me. So I'm really excited for this month of May partnership. I think you guys are really going to enjoy learning about it. And again, I'm never going to promote something on here that I don't personally use and believe in. So it's always something that I can attest to, which that's really important to me. And then lastly, if you are interested in receiving my own personal weekly menu plan, I have a weekly newsletter called the Sunday Brunch Club that comes out every Sunday morning. And in there, I put my own personal menu plan for the week. So breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, I put recipes in if and when I use them, or just kind of describe how I cook things, with some, you know, fueling tips and kind of breaking down other nutrition myths. You know, like last week I talked about sodium bicarb. Is that a supplement that really works? What's the deal with that? You know, just kind of breaking down some of those things on social media. So that's what I'm really having fun with. And if you're interested in receiving that, you can get a free 2-week trial if you head over to my website, fuelingforward.com, and go to the newsletter tab. You can subscribe to either of those. And then I have my free newsletter that's monthly. That one comes out on the first of every month. And so that one will be coming out next week as well. So if you're interested in those resources, feel free to go check them out. But otherwise, we can go ahead and dive into today's Q&A session. All right. This first question comes to us from Allie. Allie says, "Hello, I recently discovered your podcast, and as a runner that has always struggled with underfueling, I'm so grateful for the information you're putting out there through your podcast and Instagram. Unfortunately, I really got into running during a time when life stress led me to developing an eating disorder where I was drastically reducing my portion sizes and cutting foods out of my diet. I was able to keep training during all this, so I convinced myself I must not be doing quote unquote that bad because I wasn't getting injured. Fast forward to now, a few years later, I've greatly rebuilt my relationship with food and I'm eating so much more. However, I'm now recovering from my second stress reaction in the last 6 months and can't seem to get my body back to feeling 100%. Is this mostly due to my history of underfueling? And if so, how long can I expect to see these effects until I'm out of the deficit that I've built? What can I do to help my body recover faster and stronger during this time? Thank you so much. Well, Allie, I will say, first of all, I really commend you on the work that you've done to repair your relationship with food. I know that's a really hard journey to go through, and it sounds like you're in a much better place now, which is incredible. Unfortunately, your story is not uncommon, and I know that it's really, really difficult and confusing when, you know, you used to be doing the things that you know weren't right with fueling, but you were healthy. Now you've made these changes to be healthier and take care of your body, and now is when you're seeing the bone injuries pop up. And so I know that's incredibly frustrating and confusing. So I kind of want to break down what's going on here. And like I said, this is really common in athletes who have chronically been underfueling because it does take a while for the effects of underfueling to show up in some cases. Especially when it comes to bone-related injuries, the process of decreasing bone density takes time. Just like it takes time to build bone density, it takes a lot of time to break it down. And so usually with athletes who have been under fueling for a year, even 2 years, maybe the effects of bone density loss haven't shown up yet. And it almost always happens where it coincides with a time in which you actually start feeling well. So for a lot of athletes, the first place their mind goes is, oh my gosh, I must be getting injured because I'm eating more. And that's not what's happening. What is happening is that history, that past is sort of catching up to you at an inopportune time. Not that there's ever a good time for that to happen, but I know that it makes it a lot more confusing. So first and foremost, that's probably what's happening. And I know mentally it's hard to work through. So I just want to reassure you that you're not the only person who's had this happen, and it doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. It doesn't mean that because you're now feeling better, that's what's causing these injuries to pop up. That's not the relationship. Instead, you know, thinking about that, the fact that these injuries, if you were still underfueling, could potentially be much worse. And you said you have stress reactions. They could be full-blown stress fractures if you were still in the phase of underfueling. So there's always that perspective to keep in mind that even though you're injured right now with fueling better, there's a chance that if you were fueling like you used to be, you would see an injury that's significantly worse. So, you know, one thing to keep in mind there. In terms of how long these effects last, we don't really know. There's no one specific timeline that applies to every athlete. It definitely depends on the amount of time you spent in a deficit, how great the deficit was, you know, what your current energy balance looks like, if that's appropriate or if that's still maybe a little bit low and that's kind of still exposing some of those weaknesses. We just don't know because everyone is so different in terms of the recovery process from low energy availability or REDS. So that's a hard thing, I think, for a lot of runners to wrap their minds around is that they don't know how long this can last. What we do know is the things that will help restore bone mineral density and will help reduce risks for injuries are also things that can help keep you out of that state of low energy availability and help with that recovery process. So for bone density specifically, the biggest predicting factor of bone density loss or bone-related injuries is actually overall energy balance, not necessarily things like calcium and vitamin D, which are also important, but overall energy balance is actually the number one most predictive factor of bone injuries. So that said, making sure that you are still consistently fueling and fueling enough, even though you're injured, is absolutely critical. And this is sometimes where we see those back-to-back bone injuries happen. If we have a bone injury and we're not training as much, so we start eating less to compensate for that decrease in training, then the bone doesn't really heal, or that bone density doesn't have an opportunity to restore. So then we actually see bone injuries pop up again once we're able to start getting back into training. And I've actually had this conversation with two athletes I've worked with this week, where the stress about, you know, well, I'm not training as much, so why should I be fueling like this? Kind of shifting your mindset to focus on the idea that you're fueling to support the buildup of your body. So when you're training, the focus of the buildup of your body is recovery and, you know, training adaptations. When you're injured, the focus of the buildup of your body is on repairing injured tissue, restoring bone mineral density, and healing. So even though it looks different, it's still the same concept. Your body still requires these building blocks to build itself up. The purpose of the building just looks a little bit different between being injured versus not. The other thing to keep in mind is that when you're injured and you have less training, it's a great opportunity to kind of boost you into a state of energy availability faster, because typically the difference between the amount of energy that your body is expending versus putting back in, it's a little easier to keep that in balance when you're not training as hard, assuming that you're not going nuts with the cross training. You know, that's something I've talked about before, is just being reasonable with your cross training, keeping in mind that the goal during this time of injury is to focus on building up tissue and getting into a state of energy balance. So all of those things require that you're eating at least 3 meals a day, and that you're balancing your plates with carbs, protein, and color. You know, that you're eating snacks throughout the day, so preventing those large within-day deficits where you're eating about every 3 hours throughout the day really helps with the healing process. Making sure your snacks have both carbs and protein. You know, I just talked to an athlete about this earlier, where protein was kind of her main focus when she was injured, but she kind of forgot about the carbs or didn't focus as much on them because she wasn't training as hard. And that's something that you still need. Your body still needs carbs. That's how our brain functions. We need carbs to make proper hormones. We need carbs to help our bones build. We have to make sure we're still getting carbs in addition to protein. And then, of course, if you are cross training, making sure that you're fueling before your cross training sessions. If your cross training session is over 75 minutes, definitely bringing some fuel to have during that cross training session. That will really help keep tissue from breaking down further, which is very important when you're injured, of course. And then making sure you're getting something post cross training that has carbs and protein as well. And then really just driving home that point of the cross training, balancing that with recovery. There's definitely a point at which cross training can become more destructive than constructive. So just remembering the focus of a period of time when you're injured is to heal. It's not necessarily to try to gain fitness. And I know it can be stressful thinking about, you know, losing fitness or your body changing. But really, if you're not healing, then you're not going to be able to get back to running, which is what's ultimately going to help you, you know, get stronger and faster. So just kind of thinking big picture, long term, what are my goals during this injury, and how can I continue to stay the course despite the fact that I'm feeling a little frustrated? And again, just remembering that it's common to see past underfueling catch up to you at a time when you've started working on your fueling, and it's not because you're eating more that you got injured. And a previous episode with Allie Ostrander, she talks a lot about this. So that's a great episode if you're currently injured and kind of struggling with that mindset. Go listen to Allie's episode. She has a lot of really insightful things to say. Thanks for the question, Allie. I hope you heal quickly. Okay, this next question comes from Avery, and Avery asks, is all chocolate milk created equal for post-run recovery? What is the difference between adding chocolate syrup to whole or 2% milk versus store-bought chocolate milk versus something like Fairlife chocolate milk? Great question, Avery. So really what we're looking at for chocolate milk, and everyone always asks, why chocolate milk? Why can't it be plain milk? What we want post-training is something that has both carbs and protein. So the chocolate milk has more carbs than plain milk because the sugar in chocolate milk is higher. And again, people are like, oh my gosh, the sugar, do I really want that? Post-training, getting sugar in, a simple sugar, spikes our insulin level, which is a hormone that helps us take in glucose that's in our bloodstream and put it into our tissues. So spiking insulin after a workout actually improves recovery. It's going to help you replenish those muscle glycogen stores, those carbohydrate stores faster than something that does not have sugar or that's a lower carb content. So you can increase your glycogen stores by up to 30% more by having something with carbs and protein instead of just the protein alone. So that's kind of the purpose of the chocolate milk. That said, I would say no, not all chocolate milk is created equally. And when I'm looking at a post-workout snack that includes chocolate milk, I'm trying to look at the content of carbs and protein. So I'll use like a typical, you know, box of Horizon chocolate milk that you would just get at the store, those like boxes that come with the straw. One of those has about 10 grams of protein and about 30 grams of carbs versus Fairlife milk, especially the Fairlife protein drinks. Those usually have about 20 grams of protein and maybe only 10 grams of carbs because they don't use as much sugar. So either one is fine, but what I'm trying to do is supplement either one to help get someone's post-workout snack to be closer to 20 grams of protein and 60 grams of carbs. So for example, if we had that chocolate milk, instead of having one chocolate milk, you could have two. The Horizon chocolate milks, if you had two of those, you would get 20 grams of protein and 60 grams of carbs. You could also pair it with something that has carbs and protein, like, you know, an RX bar. Those two together would get you to that 20 grams of protein, 60 grams of carbs. If we're looking at that Fairlife drink, we have 20 grams of protein, but we're only looking at probably 20 grams of carbs. So in that case, we'd want to add something that has about 40 grams of carbs. So a good example there would be something like those fig bars. You could add a banana. You could add two applesauce squeeze pouches, some dried fruit, you know, something like that to get that total grams of carbs up. So that's what I'm looking at when I'm looking at chocolate milk. You could absolutely add chocolate syrup to regular milk. That would end up looking pretty similar to the Horizon milk, where, you know, about 8 ounces of milk is going to have around 10 grams of protein. And then depending on how much chocolate syrup you use, you're going to get some carbs there. So you could definitely do that. You would just want to make sure that you have maybe 16 ounces of milk instead of just 8 ounces of milk. You can also blend things up into a drink. So one of my favorite post-run drinks would be milk with like the Scratch chocolate recovery powder and then a banana. And that is super tasty and has more carbs and protein compared to just the chocolate milk by itself, but it's just as good. I mean, that said, I know that a lot of times if you're having chocolate milk, it's because it's easy to grab on the go. So those are just some suggestions of things that you can pair with your chocolate milk to make it more balanced. But generally speaking, trying to get about 20 grams of protein and about 60 grams of carbs, about a 3-to-1 ratio of carbs to protein post-run is going to be the most effective at improving your recovery. Okay, this next question says, if I'm averaging 20 to 30 miles a week, how much carbs should I aim to get? The other day I had around 250 and I was afraid that was too much. Yeah, super great question. So I want to preface a lot of the stuff that I'm going to say with, I don't really like to get runners to focus too much on numbers. You know, I've said this before, but the problem with focusing on numbers is that it gives us this goal to hit that can be a little bit arbitrary because our body's needs definitely vary from day to day. And a lot of times taking into account everything else that you're doing in the day, you know, if you are in school all day, your brain is using a lot of carbohydrates. So even if you trained less, you might still need just as many carbs as you would on a long run day. If let's say you had like a 2-hour lecture and you had an exam, you know, things where you're using more carbs. Maybe you took the kids to the park and you were standing out at the park all day, or you took your dog on a long walk, or, you know, you're really stressed. You know, we need more carbs in times of stress. So there are days and ways in which our body requires more nutrients, and there are days where it maybe requires less. And so by focusing on a specific number, that takes away your ability to choose for yourself in that moment. if you should be eating more. I think people get really caught up on, oh, if I've hit my, you know, grams of carbs for the day, then I can't eat anymore, even if I still feel hungry, even if I'm craving sugar. You know, there are ways that our body can communicate with us and tell us if it needs more. And I think we lose sight of that if we focus too much on numbers. That said, I also know that a lot of runners feel very uncertain when it comes to understanding how much they need. And I think that in some ways, knowing what your carb needs are especially can be a good anchor for understanding how to build your meals and snacks in terms of quantities and things like that. So again, I'm going to talk about numbers here. So if you're somebody who feels really triggered by numbers, I would maybe skip forward a little bit here. But generally speaking, depending on the type of training that you're doing, depending on how much training you're doing, you know, even though you said it's 20 to 30 miles per week, you know, are you training really intensely when you're running? Are you doing really hard runs, interval training, hill sprints? You know, are you cross training in between days that you're running? So I try to look at it more in terms of hours of training per week. So if you're training around an hour, more or less each day per week, the amount of carbs that we have shown in research that you need is 5 to 7 grams of carbs per kilogram of body weight. So the way that you would calculate that is you would take your weight in pounds and divide it by 2.2 to get your weight in kilograms. Then you would multiply that weight by 5 to get the low end of your range, and multiply your weight in kilograms by 7 to get the high end of your range. So to give you an example of that, if someone's training around an hour each day between running and strength training and cross training and walking and all of that, if they're 130 pounds, their carb needs would be between 300 and 400 grams per day. So this listener said that they're averaging 20 to 30 miles per week and that they ate 250 grams of carbs. So depending on this person's size, that actually might be much too low. And depending on what else you're doing outside of training, that also might be much too low. You know, as training volume goes up, the amount of carbs that you need goes up. Like when I was running my highest mileage, you know, between 70 and 80 miles per week, my carb needs were between 8 to 12 grams of carbs per day per kilogram of body weight. So, you know, it can definitely be a lot higher than you think, even if you feel like you're not running that many miles. I think carbohydrates is the main area that I see runners underdoing it. That would also depend on the runner's age. Like if this was a high school runner asking me about this, your carb needs as a high school athlete are much, much higher, and even collegiate athletes, because you're still growing. Technically, we're still growing into our early 20s. So the amount of carbs that you need to support growth and development and training and being in school all day, walking around campus, they're so high. So a 20 to 30 mile week for a high school runner, their carb needs would still probably be closer to that 8 to 10 grams of carbs per kilogram of body weight per day, because their demand for carbs is so much greater versus somebody who is maybe a postmenopausal woman who handles carbs differently. Those needs are going to look different. So there's no one-size-fits-all recommendation for anybody, but generally speaking, like I've said before, I've never once worked with a runner who is eating enough carbs, and that goes for the runners who tell me, oh my gosh, I eat so many carbs. I believe that you think you eat a lot of carbs, but when we actually break it down, most people are undershooting their carbs. And I actually, again, just had this conversation with one of my athletes right before I recorded this. The focus right now on social media and everything is on protein. Protein, 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 get your protein. And while, of course, you do need protein, I'm seeing a lot of runners eating even less carbs than I used to because they're focusing so much on that protein. So again, I don't encourage people to focus on numbers. I think a more helpful approach is that performance plate model that I've mentioned before. My previous newsletter actually went through that. So if you subscribe, you can go back in the archive and see that newsletter. And I kind of break down how to build your plate based on the performance plate model. But that's something that a lot of dietitians use. I really like it because it's a lot more accessible than just saying like this many grams of carbs, because most of us don't know what that means, and then we'd have to measure our food, and that's another thing that I don't really encourage athletes to do. That can be a really slippery slope. So thinking about trying to have about the size of 2 hands of carbs at each meal. And again, we're talking starchy carbohydrates, things like potatoes, rice, pasta, oatmeal, that kind of stuff. About 1 hand of protein and 1 to 2 hands of color, depending on the type of training that you're doing. You know, making sure that you have at least 2 servings of carbs and at least 2 types of carbs. So for example, if you have like a yogurt bowl with granola, we'd probably want to add a second type of carb with that granola. So we could add a banana to that, something like that. So just trying to think about, do I have 2 servings of carbs or 2 types of carbs at all of my meals? And then kind of using that to anchor the rest of your plate, building that with another, you know, 1/3 to 1/4 of your plate as protein and 1/3 to 1/4 of your plate as color, but really trying to focus in on those carbohydrates. Okay, and the next question is from Kylie. Kylie says, I'm an 18-year-old high school track athlete and I also like to lift weights. I understand that I need to fuel my body in order to train and live life, but I'm struggling mentally with how much food I need to eat because I'm scared how it will change my body composition. What do you recommend? Such a great question, Kylie, and this is one I hear so often from young athletes and just athletes in general, that kind of fear of body changes really getting in the way of our ability to fuel ourselves and kind of making our fueling choices based on the fear of our body changing. So I think something that's really important for young athletes to understand, this is not something that I knew and that I learned the hard way. And a lot of people that I've run with over the years have shared similar experiences where, you know, when we are 14, 15, 16, we kind of go through puberty and we expect our body to change. We know that it's going to happen. Sometimes that doesn't make it any less stressful, but we know that our body is going to change. What we don't often realize is that we go through a second body change when we transition from high school to college, so around 18, 19, 20. And then we often go through a third one when we graduate college, so usually mid-20s. Body changes are very normal. They're a normal part of life. But I think generally as a society, we're told or we're taught that body changes are bad, especially if our body gets bigger. That means that's a bad thing. That means we've done something wrong. And that's not the reality, right? Body changes are supposed to happen. They're normal. They're healthy. And anytime we try to fight those, that's when we see issues arise. So the first thing I try to tell young athletes, especially high school athletes, is you have to give your body time and space to change. I know that it's stressful, but it is going to happen at some point. And it's much better to allow your body to change on its own when it wants to, rather than fighting that change. And then what ends up happening for a lot of runners that I see go through this is they get to college and they experience their first injury. And this is something I just talked about earlier, where that kind of chronic underfueling catches up to you at some point. And then they're kind of forced to take a break from running, which they haven't really done throughout their high school career. And that taking the break allows their body to get back into a state of energy balance. And all of a sudden, now they're going through the body changes that they should have gone through when they were 15 or 16. And then that feels really stressful. So then they try to eat less because they think, oh my gosh, I'm gaining all this weight. I need to eat less to try to fight these changes. And then they end up more underfueled. They go try to train again. They get injured again. The cycle starts all over. So I see this happen a lot in young runners who have not given their body the time and space and resources it needs to change earlier on. So that's kind of the first thing that I would say, Kylie, is just, you know, it's okay for your body to change. If fueling properly while you're training causes a shift in your body, it may be one that needed to happen. And it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing or that you've done anything wrong. I think that's something that we all as a society could improve our mindset upon. The second thing that I want to mention, again, I don't necessarily want to talk about like weight loss or gain, but What we have seen in research is that athletes who are under fueling or athletes who have REDS actually have a higher body fat percentage compared to those who are properly fueled. And I want to mention that because I think for a lot of athletes, the reason why they try to eat less or they end up in that state of low energy availability is because they're wanting to lose body fat and gain muscle mass. And not eating enough actually does the opposite. It causes you to lose muscle mass and actually increases fat mass because it's trying to store more resources because it doesn't feel safe to let those go. So that's the second thing to keep in mind is if the goal is to change body composition, the only way you can do that is by fueling properly. And I think for me, the thing that I try to drive home for athletes, especially young athletes, is there's a lot to be said for being happy and feeling good, having energy, feeling strong, and maybe being a little bit, you know, having a slightly higher weight compared to being smaller but struggling with low energy, you know, low mood, mental health challenges like more anxiety and depression, not feeling strong, not feeling energized, you know, not feeling like yourself, not feeling like you can engage with your friends and family. I think there's a lot more to life to focus on besides just what's my body fat percentage and how do I look in a swimsuit? Like, those are not things that I think are worth the energy and time to focus on. I personally know that I will feel more confident in my body and I'll feel better in my body if I'm happy and if I feel strong and if I can do the things I like to do, if I have the energy to spend time with friends and family, to feel like myself. To me, those are the things that are more important. And, you know, I know for performance that body composition, there are times when that can be a factor for sure. I don't want to negate that or pretend like we can't talk about that because yes, that is true. But if I'm working with an athlete and we're going to focus on body composition, this athlete, I need to know that they are properly fueling, that the tweaks that we're making are not going to be taking away from energy availability. And most of the time, that's not necessarily an appropriate adjustment to make for teen athletes. Again, that's a time when your body is still shifting and adjusting and finding its new normal after going through puberty. For girls especially, we do see an increase in body fat that's temporary, that comes along with going through puberty, that's not permanent and will, you know, level out if you will give your body the time and space to do that. So, long-winded answer to your question, Kylie, I think generally just focusing on fueling for health, fueling for happiness, strength, you know, energy, and focusing less on trying to eat less for body composition changes and trusting the process that by fueling your body properly, that is what will allow you to see those body composition changes that you're hoping for. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question for the next Q&A episode, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Next week's episode will be an interview with my friend and fellow dietitian, Riley Beatty, who talks all about her experience as a collegiate soccer player who had lost her period, everything she did to get her period back, and her own practices period recovery program for young athletes. Thanks so much for being here and for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.